This is Pat Loika, and you're listening to Loika Mania. How's it going, everyone? Pat Loika here. You're listening to Loika Mania, episode 51. Once again, I am joined by my tag team partner, the squire to my knight, Mr. Adam Witt.
Comical and topical. Very nice, Pat. Very nice.
Of course. You know, we're all about topical here at Loika Mania. This week, we have a very special guest, and you know, we've been a fan of this person for quite a while now. He has written some of the most enjoyable comics in the last couple of years, including Action Comics, Captain Britain, and MI-13. And he's about to launch Demon Knights and Stormwatch for the new DC 52. And it's because of that we have invited Mr. Paul Cornell to the show. And suffice it to say, this may be one of our favorite interviews that we've ever done, you know? Paul has been very gracious, very, very fun, gave us a lot of information about his new books, and kind of gave us more insight as to his process. You know, what did you think of this whole thing, Adam?
It's really fucking cool. It's really, really cool. He spent a good amount of time with us. He told us a lot of stuff that we didn't expect to hear. I mean, there's a lot of stuff about Stormwatch and Demon Knights in here, so... You know, people that are looking forward to those books, this is going to be a good one for you to listen to once we get toward the back half of the interview. And then he went through, you know, a lot of his earlier stuff, which
we touched upon everything in his catalog with the exception of his UK work, which, you know, we were unfamiliar with. And we didn't really get to talk about Dark X-Men, but, you know, really, why talk about that when you can talk about Action Comics and Captain Britain, which is, you know, some of the best stuff out there. Of course, Knight and Squire, which... God, that was such a great book that, you know, that really should have had a bigger following, in my opinion.
Oh, well, he talks a little bit about that, about how there was kind of a trade-off, you know, just there were only a handful of people reading it, but the people that read it loved it. You know, it reminds me of how Mervender talked about Frankencastle, mm-hmm. You know, like people read it, they either completely loved it or completely hated it. And I mean, I think that's almost better than having a, you know, huge mm-hmm. following or whatever.
Yeah, and... you know, Paul has been very gracious. You know, he spilled a lot of information. Any, you know, Wildstorm fans, you know, or Authority fans, you guys who love Stormwatch, just based on what he told us here. I mean, he knows these characters really well, and he has some really interesting stuff coming up. And I think anyone who's a fan of the Wildstorm universe will get into it. Of course, fans of the Demon and the medieval era DC characters will get a kick out of Demon Knights as well. And Adam, before we move into the interview itself, where can people find you on Twitter and online?
On Twitter specifically, you can find me at twitter.com/AdamWitt, and then my blog is adamwitt.wordpress.com. And where can people find you on the internet, Pat?
You can find me at patloika.com or comicbooknoise.com/loikamania, and of course twitter.com/patloika. Once again, big thanks to our buddies over at cheapgraphicnovels.com for being very, very cool people who take care of this show. And that should cover everything. Again, thank you for all the reviews. Thanks for all the really cool feedback we've been getting in the last few shows. I got some really nice feedback about the San Diego Comic-Con Juggernaut of an episode. And... it's much appreciated. That was a fun episode to do. We had some fun people on. And be sure to leave us some iTunes reviews, because that would be really cool. That would be very much appreciated.
When you make Pat happy, you make the world happy.
I wouldn't go that far, but yes, let's guilt people into it. You want the world to be a happier place. Leave us some iTunes reviews. That would be great. Anyways, guys, thank you very much for listening. Next week we'll be back with Mr. Jeff Lemire. We're going to talk about his end of the DCU and talk about some of his other work, including Essex County, The Nobody, and all of his wonderful work that's come up through Top Shelf and Vertigo. And, of course, we're going to talk about Superboy and, of course, his upcoming relaunch books like Animal Man, which is probably one of the books I'm really anticipating. And Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, because, damn it, it's a Frankenstein book. And Jeff Lemire knows how to write Frankenstein.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. So until then, you guys take it easy and take care. And we are back. This time we are joined by our excellent guest for this week, Mr. Paul Cornell. Of course, Paul is the Paul's been writing for Action Comics for DC for a while now, and he's about to be writing Demon Knights and Stormwatch, also for DC under the New 52. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Hello, hi.
We've been big fans of your work for some time, and it's kind of you've actually only been in the industry for a fairly short time. You started in 2007 with I think it's Wisdom for Marvel. It's your first work, right?
Yeah, that first American work. I've been in British comics for actually it's 25 years, which makes the Eagle Award for Best Newcomer really ironic. But there we are.
Yeah, they tend to hand out awards for Best Newcomer for folks who've been in the business for quite a while. But I guess you've really made your mark since then. I was curious though. With British comics, how did you get started?
I was a Doctor Who fan who was ended up writing for Doctor Who magazine. And as a comics fan also, I was desperate to write the Doctor Who comic strip in that. And a wonderful editor called John Freeman brought me on and basically started teaching me how to write comics. So I broke in there.
Fantastic. And you've been in the industry for quite a while since then. Now, how is it like breaking into the comics industry over in the UK compared to, like, say, here?
Well, as always, it's one of the most difficult creative industries to break into, I think. There isn't an established, program for bringing on new talent. It is mostly about seeing people doing good work in other industries and reaching out to them. I always say to young writers-to-be that they can easily copy my example, which is what you have to do to start writing for Marvel Comics is to have Mark Miller see your Doctor Who episode and email you saying, would you like to write for Marvel Comics? It's an easy thing to follow. It really is. This is why I have no good advice on this subject to give. I haven't been through any sort of process. I think very few people have. It's a sign of health that it is so hard to get into. And unlike some other media, self-published comics are not frowned on. It's perhaps the best thing to do to publish your own work. And then it gives you something to show to the big two,
I agree. And it's always good. I mean, a lot of publishers, they always ask, they want to see the work done because they want to see how your work looks like finished, whether you're a writer or an artist. So it is, it's not as difficult as, say, trying to, get into film or something like that. At least you'll always have these books that you do that you could show off to anyone. And of course, it's pretty subjective also. You can get any kind of person to get into your work. And you mentioned, I'm assuming that Mark Miller story is how you end up getting on board with Marvel and doing Wisdom. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Nick Lowe wanted somebody to do a series he called at the time MI-13. And, we hit it off almost immediately.
Excellent. Now, we'll kind of talk about, your work at Marvel. I enjoyed that Wisdom book you did with Trevor Harrison. And I've always wondered, though, since it was a Marvel Max book and you ended up incorporating Pete into the Captain Britain book, was there any kind of editorial problem as far as, since he was a Max character at that point, bringing him into the mainstream Marvel universe?
Not really. I mean, most of the other Max characters had been in the mainstream Marvel universe at one point and would return to it after. I kind of resented the fact that we were a Max book. Nobody's fault, but, honestly, I don't think I used it particularly at all. I think there's a couple of swear words, and which means that it's a trade I can't recommend to all ages, which is annoying. But Yeah, so Master of Kung Fu, there was another Max book. And, you know, again, those guys hardly used it. Mm-hmm. I think Max was a very strange halfway house. And I'm not sure that, you know, it was very useful, but there we are.
Okay. And we'll jump into Captain Britain. This is a really well-loved book. I thought you and Leonard Kirk did some phenomenal work in this book. Lots of great characters. I really enjoyed, you know, the way you used pretty much the team you put together was fantastic. I mean, Blade. I mean, people forget that he is actually British.
Yes. I mean, I think the movies have had an effect there. You know, Wesley Snipes is really hiding his British accent very well.
See, now I actually want to hear Wesley Snipes with a British accent at this point. I think that would sound interesting, at least. And then, of course, you introduced Faiza, and then you have the Black Knight, and of course you have Spitfire. Now, was this a team that you had consciously, you know, put together yourself, or was this something that editorial pitched to you?
A bit half and half. Originally, I sort of pitched a British Avengers and tried to find all the British characters I could to make it a really big team. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we slimmed down, and I think Nick mm-hmm. suggested Spitfire, and I was a little reluctant because actually I really disliked her costume. But then, you know, she became one of my favorite characters, and I really found lots of good things to do with her. Blade was a Nick idea, which just made so much sense. It made me laugh out loud, and I mm-hmm. thought, yeah, absolutely. People have said, you know, that we should have had Union Jack in there, but Union Jack and Blade functionally are so close to each other. That Union Jack has become a vampire hunter of late, and that was bound to be what he'd do in a supernaturally themed book. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was... I love the fact it's become beloved after the fact, but I do wish we'd had all these people there at the time buying the damn thing. Marvel gave us such support and, you know, really kept us going, perhaps past the point where it was, you know... A good thing for them business-wise to do. I have nothing but admiration for them and how much they supported us, but the audience just wasn't there.
It had a great campaign ad-wise over here in the United States. I remember not having heard of the book, and then every local shop I walked into just had big Captain Britain posters everywhere, especially when you did the Dracula on the Moon thing.
Go ahead.
We sold out the first Dracula on the Moon issue. But by that point, retailers' orders levels were so low that actually they took the sellout as they'd got the level right, so they didn't order more next issue. And, you know, there comes a point, you know, thanks to the distribution system, where actually you're not going to recover. And we'd already hit it, unfortunately.
Yeah. Adam, you had a question?
Yeah, shifting kind of down from the books themselves, I wanted to ask you a little bit about process. What is the biggest challenge for you going from TV to comics and writing in those different formats?
It's interesting. They are very different. Comics is like frozen bits of television. I always say that you can... in television, you would write... he runs out of the room shouting... And we still hear him shouting from outside. And you say that as a panel to an artist, and they'll kill you. I mean, what part of that is, you know, is the artist going to draw? It's about freezing the right moments. It's got an entire grammar of its own. You have to reprogram your head. And moving between that and television and prose involves a lot of head reprogramming for me on a daily basis. I think it's good, actually. I think it's especially improved my prose, which has become a lot punchier since I started writing comics.
Are you working on a novel right now?
Yeah, quite a late stage. It's coming out from Tor next year in both the UK and the USA. It's called Cops and Monsters. It's an urban fantasy. It's... About a bunch of modern British undercover coppers in the Met, who are the only ones who can see become the only ones who can see the monsters and the magic, and decide they have to use genuine undercover police skills and methods against it. Wow. And I'm really psyched. I've always wanted to be a novelist. This is kind of where I hope to end up. And You know, I want Greg Rucker's trajectory. And actually, he was a novelist first, but you know what I mean. And yeah, so that's beautiful. That's my favourite thing right now. I've just been talking to a rabbi today about some of the mystical detail about one of the seeds.
That's a very interesting concept. When's the book expected to be out?
We don't know yet, apart from next year. I'm just about to deliver a new draft tomorrow.
I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait for that book to come out. And I'm a big fan of police procedural type of things. And I think what you just stated, I don't think I've ever heard anything done in that manner before. So I look forward to this book when it comes out.
Oh, thank you very much. We've got an intelligence analyst on board who withholds their name, and so we've got all this beautiful intelligence analyst detail.
Awesome. kind of going back on Captain Britain, I thought we were kind of talking for a bit about the Dracula story. I thought that was probably the last real Dracula story Marvel had. You have such a great portrayal of those characters. I was always wondering, like, were you a big Marvel? Were you a big fan of Marvel horror stuff or?
Oh yeah, I've read the entire Marv Wolfman Tomb of Dracula run. My favourite thing is Bronze Age Marvel. In the 70s, Marvel were just so effortlessly adult at the same time as being all ages, and with so much wonderful writing and bizarre content. The list is actually a very long one, from Don McGregor to Steve Gerber to Steve Englehart to Doug Moench. To Jungle Action, it's Deathlock. It's a tremendous time for Marvel Comics. Howard the Duck, and the way that this kind of seeps into the mainstream Marvels as well. Like Defenders is this wonderfully absurd read, and I like to think that I keep a bit of that going sometimes. That's really inflected. That's what I do.
Yeah, I thought you did a fantastic job, of kind of mixing all the, all the different aspects of the Marvel universe in that series, and you're bringing in the horror characters, you're bringing the mystical characters, and you have all this high tech sci fi stuff too. In addition to that, you have aliens, and you have it had everything, and that's what made it such a memorable read. I really love, and I miss that book.
Well, thank you. I do too. I keep coming up with Pete Wisdom plots. I think very few other writers would consider that it was a priority to rescue a poor sheriff who'd been taken over by a magic sword in Chris Claremont's run on Man Thing. I just thought, he's not going to appear anywhere else, is he? We might as well.
Your comics have kind of an Anglophone feel to them. Did you read more English writers or American writers when you were coming up, when you were getting your creative chops together?
I think American, to be honest. I mean, I was taught to read by Stan Lee reprints. And all my Bronze Age heroes are American. I think the British thing... I was in a bunch of British SF writers the other day and was introduced to somebody as the British one. I don't know what's going on there. I think because I'm actually interested in the stuff, in national identity and especially in Britishness, mm-hmm. that tends to single me out a bit. Honestly, most of my comics heroes are American, apart from the big obvious ones like Grant and, Alan Moore and, Neil Gaiman. I mean... And of course, loads of the 2000 AD crowd. But now I always wanted to kind of work in American comics. I don't know. I think in as much as I bring a British thing, it's just me trying to find a different voice, a way to be to stand out from the crowd, to be individual.
Oh, as many British comic writers as there are out there, I think a lot of them make fun of it more than anything, and you really take it and do something where it's laughing with it as opposed to at it, and you take it and you put it in a different light, and it's cool to see that.
Well, thank you. I think I'm less cynical than most British folk. I do think there are things in the British national identity worth standing up for and worth saving. That is to say, once we've once we've recreated and reshaped patriotism to include everybody who lives in Britain in a liberal way, to be diverse about our concept of Britishness, to have it include everyone, I think then we can be patriotic about that. And we need... Over here, there's actually a great fear of patriotism because it smacks of the right. They've kind of colonised it. And I have a great socialist patriotism. And so, you know, it's about doing a bit of that. There's a few scenes in Captain Britain that really apply to that. Some British people, some British comic readers, do find it a little hard to stomach the full-onness of my Captain Britain in that regard. But I think it's in a good cause.
How did those audiences react to your Knight and Squire on that same kind of token?
Well, it's interesting. Knight and Squire is equally joyful about the British.
Absolutely.
And Knight and Squire kind of is everything I hated about depictions of Britain in previous superhero comics. Except there's a large difference between doing it knowingly and doing it because you live in California and think that British people are funny. Tweedis, satire and... A sort of jolliness had been used as awful cliched images of us for a very long time. But at the same time, Knight and Squire does that deliberately, and alongside it, puts some grit into it as well. Kind of.
Yeah, I love the thematic shift toward the end where you just kind of pull all of that together and spin it into this different thing. It's really smooth. It feels, especially once you get to issues 5 and 6 of that story, it feels so right when you do that, and it's so obvious. And I so didn't expect to go that way.
I think Jimmy Broxton, I'm incredibly lucky to have had him. I think he's a genius. He had Dave Gibbons come up to him at the Kapow convention specifically to find him to congratulate him on Knight and Squire.
That's really cool.
That's awesome.
I love the fact that towards the end, Jimmy, who is capable of many different styles, actually draws the Joker in a much more realistic style than he's drawn the rest of the book. And it really helps the storytelling. It really shows he actually seems like an intrusion from another universe. He's drawn differently.
Yeah, he really stood out. He's like, you know, he had the everything was darker with him. Like, he, you know, there's more of him in shadow, for example, in some scenes. And then, like, you know, there's more detailed line work in him compared to everyone else. And I thought
please do go on. Yes, absolutely.
And I thought he really, you know, you do feel like he's not meant to be there. It's like he's not in the right place compared to everyone else. And I thought that was great. Especially, you know, it becomes even more apparent when he gets into the pub later on towards the end.
Yeah. I do think if you're in the DC universe and you take a flight from Metropolis to Gotham to Britain, you take off in Metropolis and it's all sunny and everything is really clearly drawn. Mm-hmm. You go through some kind of surreal vortex around Gotham and you might just be a splodge of paint when you hit the tarmac there. And then when you take off for Britain, it all becomes really clear, bouncy line work again. it's weird traveling around the world in the DC universe.
Kind of focusing more on Knight and Squire. You talked about the patriotism and your pride for where you're from. I really thought that the way the characters interact with people, the way it really shows a much more friendlier environment there in the UK compared to what you would see in typical American comics or in comics set in the US.
I do think there's room for that humanity and friendliness and domesticity.
Yeah.
In American set comics too, because it's certainly true of American communities as well.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I wanted to show was the way that a famous author can live very quietly amongst a town and not ever be bothered by anybody, because all the locals act as a kind of security system that is much more efficient than a high-tech security system. And it struck me that Knight and Squire could have their identities broadly known across their hometown and still be absolutely protected against outsiders. I think this happens in the real world quite a lot.
And also my favorite, one of my favorite concepts from the from the book was the of course the pub where everyone there's this magic that prevents everyone from kind of doing anything against each other. So supervillains and superheroes hang out in the same place. I thought that was just way too much fun, and I would like to see more of that sort of thing going on in other comics, because I don't know, I always thought that it's fun to have these characters, these larger than life characters, kind of interact with each other like they're all human beings. They're all just want to sit down and have a drink. I thought that was a fantastic concept.
Well, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could actually see them talking to each other?
Yeah,
and they had to talk.
Yeah, and then well, they're all in this place, and then of course when they're outside, they all look at each other differently when they're outside, of course. So it's really great.
Well, I think, I know a lot of pubs like that, and I'm sure there are a lot of American bars like that, where everybody involved in a particular field gets together on a particular night. And that includes people who are at each other's throats. And I just thought there should be a superhero version of that. I'd love to write a mini-series about that pub. I think, given the sales on Knight and Squire, I very much doubt it'll ever happen. And, of course, in Flashpoint, Britain is ruled by Wonder Woman, who is presumably, being evil, slaughtered by entire cast. So I hope the milkman put up a good fight. That's all I got to say.
Oh.
Oh man, that's just wrong. But I would absolutely buy a book, about this pub and all these characters. I love the fact that you guys really went out of your way to introduce all these characters in this book, and you kind of gave a pretty good idea of who these characters are and how they function, and they really are a joy to read, and they certainly left me wanting for more.
Well, thank you. 130 of them in 6 issues. Wonder Woman took a long time in getting through all of those.
She had a very big sword.
Well, maybe she used our miniseries as a guide. Have I got that one? What's that one's name?
They used it like a checklist.
Absolutely. Have we got Birthday Girl? The very last panel that Jimmy drew, I was just writing the checklist of all the characters we'd created for the last issue, mm-hmm. and I had to email him and ask him, did you create anybody in the background of that last panel? He said yes, too. Because a lot of them were people he'd just dropped into corners in the art in issue one especially, and he'd send me notes saying, oh, that's Hammer and Tongs. So some of these guys I gave dialogue to later on, because they're fantastic. But, we really should just keep that universe going somewhere. The thing is, the sales were puny, and this is one reason that everybody who talks about it seems to like it, because actually, everybody who invested by the 6th issue really, really liked it. There was nobody left reading it who didn't like it,
Yeah, I think it was unanimously adored by everybody. I have not seen a bad word said about that book. And
well, I do think this is the trade-off you make in comics. Mm-hmm. You either get adored or you get great sales. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as you get great sales, enough people will hate what you've done. Mm-hmm. To really, really raise a stink. So the only way to continue, being critically acclaimed in comics is to never really sell very much.
that's really a shame. But hopefully, the market will allow for a sequel. Even if it's in the new DC universe, I don't think you can. I think you can still bring these characters back in the form that you introduced them in. Really. Also, by the way, I was really saddened that about Jarvis at the end, but he was a really good character.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Go ahead, please.
No, please go on.
I was actually shifting off of Knight and Squire because we wanted to talk a little bit about Action Comics, and I hung on something you said about you being less cynical than some of the other writers in comics, and I think Action Comics shows that in a really interesting way, because you're writing Lex Luthor, and it's a Lex Luthor book to start, but it's really upbeat. Normally Lex Luthor stories are really dark, and you took that in a different direction, and it's almost where you want him to get the power at the end just to see how it goes.
Well, I think you've got to empathize with him, otherwise you won't keep on buying his adventures, quite simply. And there's a lot to empathize with in Lex Luthor. He's one click of the dial away from being a wonderful human being. But that one click contains all human weakness. And I think he's fascinating endlessly. It's a kind of an upbeat series because you want to bounce along with the protagonist, but also because I think he'd live kind of an upbeat life. If you weren't around him, I mean, there'd always be the risk of being killed in some ridiculous enterprise. but you know, he gets out and does things. And, you know, we're not in his head all the time. In his head is not a good place to be. I think upbeat sort of happened. I'm kind of hesitant to embrace the kind of, the humorous, whimsical upbeat writer, because that makes it hard for me to do the times when I want to be the absolutely nasty, terrifying writer. But, you know, there aren't many people who do upbeat in comics, and I'm quite pleased to join those tiny ranks, as long as people recognise that it is a deliberate style, and aren't terribly, terribly upset when that horrifying thing happens in issue 1, 3, 4 of Demon Knights. There's probably something in 2 as well.
And I really, you know, I'm a big fan of supervillains, you know, and I thought I was very... When you first announced that you were going to be doing action and it was going to be starring Lex, I was very, very much intrigued by it because, I'm more of a supervillain fan than a superhero fan. You know, I prefer the bad guys. And I love how you put Lex on this quest and you put him up against other supervillains. That was this something that you've always wanted to do? I mean, you know, every now and then you think about who would win in this fight, and was this one of those type of instances where you finally got to do something you've always wanted to do, as far as pitting Lex against other people, or
it was writer survival reflex. Mm-hmm. You know, you're offered a Lex Luthor series. What does he do? Does he fight heroes? No, then we'll be rooting for the hero every week. So he's got to fight people worse than he is. Mm-hmm. If he's fighting villains, how about we have a different villain every issue, so there'll be new interest every issue? I kind of knitted together the quest from the idea that he would have to combat somebody different each issue. And it was entirely a mechanism to keep reader interest. And but it did mean that I got to write all these people I wanted to write. And wonderfully, I sent a shopping list of villains I'd like to use to DC. And they replied that one's still in jail then, and that one's off in another book then. And which made me feel really good that they had a continuity where they actually knew where everybody was at a given moment. And so that was very satisfying to be able to... Black Adam was the one I really wanted and who was off the map. And but I can't think of many others that... I got the Joker on the basis that he remained in jail.
Fantastic. Kind of switching... And did you have any other questions with regards to action, or...?
No, that was pretty... That covered it.
Okay. Well, we want to shift gears and talk about, you know, the DC Universe, that reboot that's coming in September. And it's kind of our theme for this month to talk to people who are involved in the relaunch and see what, you know, the process was like for everyone involved. Mm-hmm. So we'll start off because I've heard, you know, some stuff from the San Diego Con and the panels, and apparently this was in the works since October of last year. Were you approached that early, you know, to participate in this?
Oh, boy. I don't honestly remember. People always ask me questions about timescales in writing.
You don't need to have the exact time. I mean, regardless, I mean, if they approached you some time back, what did they pitch to you, the books that you ended up, helming, or was this, did you get to choose?
No, there was, initially I was approached to do a Demon series, and I replied, how about it's the Demon and his friends, and we had a bit of back and forth, and the kind of book was formed out of that back and forth, and friends being absolutely not the situation. And then a few weeks later, I was approached for Stormwatch, and there's been a lot of evolution. there's been a wonderful kind of creative coming together. One of my favourite things about being on this line is the way that all the writers in The Dark and The Edge are talking to each other. And kind of we're forming this universe out of new cloth. It's wonderful. And I'm thoroughly enjoying myself. I've been given two team books, and, you know, these basically tabula rasa, the ability to create stuff all over the place. So it's kind of like what I got in Light and Squire, the ability to fill in a corner of the universe, but much more at the centre. Stormwatch especially is right at the centre. And, you know, that's a really good feeling.
Excellent. And with Stormwatch, actually, I'm really intrigued about that book because I was a big, I grew up on a lot of the Wildstorm books. And did you get to pick which characters you were going to use in that one? Or are you actually at
yes.
liberty to mention which characters are going to be appearing?
Yeah, we've got a cast of 9 in Stormwatch. Mm-hmm. It contributes to it being a really fast-paced book. It's breathtakingly fast. It's, we don't really let up until about issue 5 or 6. I was very much a fan of Warren Ellis when he transformed Stormwatch into the Authority, and I kind of wanted to grab some of his tone of voice, that arrogance of his characters, and the science fiction. There's no magic in Stormwatch. This is hopefully a fairly hard SF take on things.
Interesting.
The Apollo and the Midnighter were absolutely a no-brainer. They were obviously going to be at the heart of this. I really like the Engineer. I love Jack Hawksmoor more than anything else. And,
such a cool character.
He's a brilliant character.
Absolutely. There's something about the way that those powers from the Wildstorm universe are defined. I was hit by radioactive stuff and thus became something man. But he's the god of cities, and there's something almost medieval in terms of cosmology about how that science works. And I think it kind of connects with very modern science, and there's a lot of that through Jack. I wanted a Century Babe, I wanted a Jenny Q, but she's a bit different to what she was before the universe shifted, mainly because I think China might be the thing, and so she wears a Chinese t-shirt. Mm-hmm. And she is 11, because I don't see the point of artificially aging a century baby. Who else have we got in R9?
You have the Martian Manhunter there, which I thought was an interesting choice.
Absolutely. He really makes sense in the context of the book. When you see it, you'll go, that's why they've got him. And Stormwatch have been defending the planet from alien threats and alien things and looking into, let's call it the archaeology of the impossible for centuries now. And they regard superheroes, this very modern phenomenon of the last 10 years or so, as a bunch of amateurs in capes and tights who've just suddenly appeared and who are stumbling about trying to do what they do very badly. Stormwatch are the professionals. And unfortunately, we join them at a tremendous moment of crisis in their organization when they're not looking very professional at all and they're having to deal with 3 things at once and huge crises are brewing. And they'll end up fighting gigantic alien monsters drawn in an incredible modern Jim Steranko mock way within the first 3 issues. And the Martian Manhunter, basically, he sees that he can have the best of both worlds. He works for Stormwatch, has been working for them for a very long time, in his human form, let us say, in his glasses and suit. And then, every now and then, he can go off and save the day as a superhero and hang about with superheroes and hear what they're gossiping about. He doesn't let down either community. He's not going to betray trusts placed with him by other superheroes. But at the same time, he has a very functioning dual life there. And It really makes sense to me. Who else have we got? We have our new characters, who I think I'll wait for you to meet when they come on stage.
That's perfectly fine. You know, surprises are always good. And of course, one of the things that excites me about this is the fact that they are going to be fighting the moon.
What is it with you and the moon?
Yeah, I know. It didn't occur to me until afterwards. Somebody said vampires from the moon. I went, oh no, again. What does that mean about my psyche? Oh, it's not vampires from the moon, at least. It's just something from the moon.
They're just
entirely different.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the book, and like I said, it's really cool to see these characters back and, you know, in the spotlight. And I'm a big fan also of Miguel Sepulveda's art.
Oh, it's
so
amazing!
The covers I've seen. The cover number two is fantastic, and that kind of shows you the type of scale that these guys are operating in. You see the team looking very, very stoic, and seeing all these this wreckage of what the moon has done. I look forward to it.
We're a little bit Torchwood if Torchwood fought the moon.
Ah, okay, that's a good description. let's kind of talk about your other DC book, which is Demon Knight. So, of course, you kind of mentioned earlier it's Demon and his friends. Like, what got you guys to ended up doing this as a period piece, a medieval piece, rather?
Well, it was always going to be that. I mean, I was pitched the demon back in medieval times.
Oh, okay.
And because DC are trying all these other genres with the relaunch in an effort to reach out to the mainstream, people who don't read comics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with Day and Day Digital, they've got a really good chance of reaching them. Mm-hmm. And this is an attempt to tune into the feeling about games like Dragon Age, series like Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very gritty, I'd say realistic, but it's got magic in it, fantasy book, which is the Magnificent Seven in medieval times, basically. The demon doesn't want to be part of a superhero team. Etrigan would rather do almost anything else, and they're not superheroes. But circumstances and the needs of a tiny village threatened by an enormous horde from which they cannot escape kind of force seven disparate characters together. And I'm enjoying it hugely. The artwork on this by Diogenes Neves.
Mm-hmm.
It's just tremendous. It's like Prince Valiant. It's beautiful. It's got all this detail in the background. It's all this action-packed. It's absolutely wonderful. And again, I love team books. I love the interplay between different team members. And this lot basically have been thrown together. They're learning about each other just very quickly in the midst of battle. And it's the demon, Madame Xanadu, Vandal Savage, and the Shining Knight, who is largely Grant Morrison's The Shining Knight. That's the second largest question that I'm most asked. The question I'm most asked is, will Apollo and the Midnighter still be gay? meaning I really should get a T-shirt that just says, yes, they're still gay. But the second biggest question is that going to be Grant Morrison's Shining Knight? And yes, it is. With a few new twists. She's been changed by the change in the universe, and we'll see exactly, that's really important, what's changed with her. Or him, I should say, of course. You know, it's a man, I suppose. And three new characters, let me see, I've talked about the Horsewoman.
Yes.
She can't walk, but she can ride. She's got an empathy with all horses. She's the best archer of history. I'm really pleased with her. She's hardcore. She's Clint Eastwood. She's got a fantastic introductory scene. I'm not bigging up my own work here, but it's wonderful when the artist contributes a fantastic introductory CD, and you just think, oh, yes, that. Al-Jabbar, who is the medieval Tony Stark, and who's a great inventor and maker of devices, and who has a way with the gab, with the chat, and a mysterious female other, who again I will leave until the book.
Well, thank you for telling us so much about it.
I've just got on.
No, please.
This is great. There's a lot of folks who probably have not heard all this information before, so it's really cool for you to share all this with us. Now, again, you're part of this really big undertaking with DC. As far as the previous universe is concerned, was there anything that you would have wanted to have gone to work on that, with the new DCU, you probably wouldn't be able to get a chance to do, or was there anything that you were looking into, working on that time?
I don't think there's anything one wouldn't get a chance to do. In that, there was initially this strange assumption that the 52 were going to be locked in stone, and nothing new was going to arise after that, mm-hmm. And also that any characters who weren't, centrally featured in the 52 mm-hmm. were going to be forgotten and erased, mm-hmm. which isn't the case either. I'm sure anything I might want to do would still be doable down the line. What I want most of all is a 16th issue. My personal best remains 15 issues and an annual, equally for Captain Britain and Action Comics, by sheer coincidence. Pat McCallum on Stormwatch has actually promised me a double-sized 16th issue spectacular.
Wow.
But and there's a couple of other things coming up which I'm very happy about. So I'm trying to think of if it's one could ask for Knight and Squire, but the audience weren't there. It wasn't editorial fiat that stopped that happening. If I said let's have a Knight and Squire series now, they'd all go, but they didn't sell at all, did they, Paul? And, it's hard to argue with that, really.
Yeah, it's a shame. With DC kind of toying around with going with the digital, maybe there's a possibility you guys can release it as a digital only series, and then maybe when there's enough sales, release a collection. I think that'd be a fun way to explore concepts like that.
Thing is, it would cost almost as much. This is what people don't get, that the paper and shipping are cheap, but the vast majority of the costs involved in making a comic are still there for the digital version. And, so digital only wouldn't make much of a difference. But I've got to say, I think it would be really funny to see what the change in the universe is had meant to the British universe of Knight and Squire. I think there would be maybe one character there who just suddenly appeared, who they all knew. Or maybe we could get a Wildstorm character, who just suddenly appeared in their universe and they'd all known forever. I think that would be fantastic to do.
Have them call it the DC UK. It pitches itself.
Yeah.
Yes, I fought alongside the postman.
Oh, man. Last I remember you signed with DC under an exclusive. Are you still with them as an exclusive writer right now?
I've still got a year to go.
Oh, excellent! Wow, I didn't realize it was been that short of a time since you started.
It's packed. It really is. The months fly by.
Yeah, they do. So much stuff comes out from both DC and Marvel, and then you don't even realize how much time is passing by. I was curious to see if you'd be interested in doing a return to Marvel or doing some stuff with them again. Like maybe, I don't know, maybe pitch a new Blade series. They've been trying to do a new Blade series every so often.
Well, because Blade series always do so well. They're not cancelled at all. Sorry. You hear it. My voice can't. I have a great difficulty even saying sarcasm. I think for whatever reason Blade series are a hard sell. I don't quite know why. Big movies that everybody remembers, vampires. I suspect because almost anything new in this current marketplace is a difficult sell. And I think that one of the nice things about digital on the day of release. Mm-hmm. I don't like the phrase day and date because it makes no sense. But digital on the day of release is that, you know, we do have a chance to sell to a new audience and see what they like. And, you know, it's possible that things like Blade would do better there. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I haven't actually thought further ahead than next week, really. But, you know, it's there's all sorts of things I want to do in the fullness of time, in comics and in other media. You know, so absolutely nothing's out of the question anywhere, really.
Excellent. Adam, did you have anything else to add?
Actually, I had another question. This is kind of shifting back to your Action Comics, but I wanted to ask about this because I think it's one of the coolest comics you've done. It's probably my favorite thing you've done. I really loved the annual. I thought that was just a really neat singular story. And what made you want to do a story in that Kirby style, that really over-the-top sort of thing?
You just dropped out there under the annual, so I was wondering what exactly it was. Thank you very much. That's very kind of you. Because I love Darkseid, and
yes.
I think that one of the things that actually makes him alien and scary are his very strange Kirby speech patterns. And so many people, when they write him, don't take on his speech patterns. This is a man who adds inappropriate inverted commas in the middle of every sentence. or as my wife goes, in the middle of every sentence. But it's talking to him must be like talking to Stalin. You must wonder, you know, with his strange emphases, exactly where you stand every moment. And I think that there's just something really appealing about the character and about the whole New Gods mythology. And I just wanted to grab some of that.
Yeah, it had such a cool manic pace to it. You really, you took everything that makes those characters cool and just kind of smashed it all together. I thought that was such a neat book.
Well, thank you. Again, we wanted to do this all, the thought patterns involved in this stuff, I think, are useful to bear in mind for anybody who wants to get into this business. We didn't want the annual to be part of the continuity of the quest, because we didn't want people who were just buying the Action Comics run to miss out on a part of the actual plot. So we just did something thematic that commentated upon it. And thus we thought doing stories set in history back at the start of Lex might be the way to go. And then we had to find villains that were around at that time and maybe would impinge on Lex's life. And actually Darkseid was something we went for very quickly, because at the point where Lex first arrives in Metropolis, that's when Darkseid is getting his lot together in Metropolis as well. So that was kind of obvious. Ra's al Ghul was a little less obvious, but again, was the villain who was around in the early days. And I think Lex, when he was young, went around looking for father figures all over the place. And because, you know, his whole character is formed by not having a father that was worth a damn. And, you know, so those two kind of made thematic sense. And then when we realized they made thematic sense, we made some play of that and had the two stories relate to each other slightly. So, you know, and because I didn't want to do the same sort of story all over again for the second one, that's why I did it in verse, because then it just feels utterly different. And I'm very proud of that annual. It's nice to have annuals, especially annuals that matter, that feel good, you know?
Yeah, and then they link up to the story. Of course, one of my favorite moments for the annual, of course, was when Darkseid tells Lex to ready your mind because there's a danger, it might be blown.
That's my best COD Kirby.
It is so great. It's such a fun annual. You know, yeah, I love that book. I'm very happy that you got to do that.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And okay, before we close out, Adam, did you have a final question for Paul?
Are you going to try to break the Knight and Squire new characters record at all in your two new books?
I think it might annoy people if I tried to do that, say Demon Knights. That would, we wouldn't have much time to meet the seven of them when there were, you know, 123 others.
I think you could do like 655.
Actually, Stormwatch is a bit like that with our 9 leads. That's a bit busy. But,
Oh, man. I'm really looking forward to these books. Once again, guys, this is Paul Cornell. He's writing Stormwatch and Demon Knights for DC. Where can people find you online?
I'm Paul Cornell's House of Awkwardness. I'm top of the Google list for my name. And I'm on Twitter, Paul_Cornell.
And, of course, we will link to these over in the website when the episode goes up. Once again, Paul, thank you very much for being very accommodating and for doing the show with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and we look forward to more of your work. And, man, thank you for doing all these great comics because they're so much fun. They're so enjoyable.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Thank you so much.
All right, well, take care, sir. And, again, best of luck with all your work.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Brave young cowboys of the near north side, mount those bridge rails, ride all night, scream when captured, arch your back, let this whole town hear your knuckles crack. Sapphire Trans Am, high beams in vain, drive wild Broncos down the plain. Push up to the corner where the turbines hiss. Someday we won't remember this. Crawl till dawn on my hands and knees. What they've done to me. Tie those horses to the post outside and let those glass doors open wide, and in their surface see two young savage things barely worth remembering. Like pagans, never get enough. Sleep like dead men, wake up like dead men. And when the sun comes, try not to hate the light. Someday we'll try to walk upright. Crawl till dawn on my hands and knees. What they've done to me.